Hi everyone, my name is Dennis Corsi. I'm the artistic director of the Fresh Fruit Festival, which is a queer arts festival in New York City. Welcome to our interview series called Up and Coming. This series is to help up and coming artists navigate the business side of building a career in theater. Today, we're going to talk about getting work as a director at off-Broadway theaters. And to talk with us about this, we have the leaders of four fantastic off-Broadway theater companies with us. Who you will meet in a moment. Before we dive into that, I want to mention that you can find more info about the Fresh Fruit Festival and participating in the festival at www.freshfruitfestival.com. And also, we're a nonprofit and run on donations. So if you like this content and want more, please consider dropping by the website to make a donation. All right, so let's meet our four panelists here. I'll call on each of you and tell us who you are and a bit about the theater company that you lead. Let's start with Natasha.
Hello, I'm Natasha, she, her. I'm the Associate Artistic Director at Playwrights Horizons, which produces new work, new plays, new musicals. I joined in January. We also have a new play, a new works lab, which develops work without necessarily going to production, although sometimes that happens as well. And there's a whole bunch of components within Playwrights Horizons that I guess we'll get to later on. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Great, thanks. Jim?
I'm Jim Nicola from the Artistic Director of New York Theater Workshop. He, him. We produce and support the work of writers and directors. That has specifically been our mission from its beginnings, 1979, writers and directors equally. We have lots of opportunity for directors to do their work. We have a sort of community of artists called the Usual Suspects, and we do a lot of work in support of them. We do residencies out of the city, blah, blah, blah. We'll talk about that more.
Great. Ralph?
Hi, I'm Ralph Pena. I'm the artistic director of my theater company. We develop and produce plays written by Asian American playwrights. We have a writer's lab with 34 Asian American playwrights. So, yes, we're busy.
Great. And Daniela?
Hi, I'm Daniela Topol from Rattlestick, she, hers. We produce work in the, we're located in the West Village, and we produce plays and develop plays that respond to the complexity of our culture. So a lot of the work that we do, we have a lot of community partners involved in the work, and we're very focused on work that has some kind of justice, impact, and relationship, work that provokes dialogue and leading to social change.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you, everybody. Honored to have you here. The first question is just so that we could sort of all get our bearings about how hiring decisions are made at your company. Tell us who makes the decisions when staffing directors and what that general process looks like. When you get a play and you decide to program it in the season, what comes next in terms of choosing a director? And would anyone like to start?
I mean, I actually kind of would like to start from a director's perspective just for a half a second, because I am a usual suspect and I've done some programs at New York Theater Workshop and I've directed for Mayi. So, and Natasha and I have been colleagues for a while. So it's just a very interesting moment to go, well, actually things are, tend to be very organic. So that was my experience as a director, was trusting an organic process of developing work and that the work leads to different theaters in very organic ways. In terms of how Rattlestick works, it is also true that it works in that way. We have a community of artists that is open and ever growing, and work gets developed through our programs, through labs, through open plays, through various sort of programs that we have, through commissions. And then directors join forces with the playwrights in very organic ways. Sometimes a playwright is really looking for a director and I'm doing matchmaking. Often a playwright and director have grown up on a piece together and they're coming as a team. And So it's a combination, but I would say more often it's the latter, that a playwright and a director are developing a project together over a long period of time, and that it's my job to help support what that project is through a development process that then will often lead to a production process.
Great, thank you.
I'm going to piggyback, because it's the same with us. We do new work, and in 90% of the cases, the playwrights already have a director in mind when they start the project, and we support that process until it goes to production. Sometimes I'm asked to pair people off with directors. That's rare. For us, the main point is to get behind the playwright and not the play. So the playwright has a ton of agency in terms of naming who they want to work with.
I'll say from my end, I'm still sort of new to Playwrights Horizons. I mean, it's a strange thing to start this position during the pandemic. It's like waves of new, right? But I haven't been through producing a play yet. So there's some things that feel very new and other things that don't. And oftentimes at Signature as well, and at LCT3 at Lincoln Center Theater, both theaters that I worked at before, oftentimes the conversation does start with the playwrights for me because of what those theaters begin with. And I assume that'll be mostly true at Playwrights Horizons, although the idea of generative artists and theater makers versus playwrights is something that I really want to push us into more. But oftentimes, like it's been said, you know, a playwright might have someone already in mind that they are working with or want to work with, and I don't want to get in the way of that. I feel like my job is to be supportive of what's there and what's working. But you know, there's also the moments where it feels like it's my responsibility to think through good creative partners in a directing capacity to put forward and offer for consideration, offer all the information I have, offer multiple intriguing artists who are directors and connect with, you know, have the playwright connect with other folks that they also could maybe talk to about working with that artist. So really just giving an array of options so that it then becomes an organic process that I'm really just feeding fuel too, if that makes sense. But I will say for the theaters I've worked at, it has begun with the playwrights in order to make sure it's a collaboration that we're not forcing, especially since, you know, this particular theater is called Playwrights Horizons. But I fully believe that, you know, we need to really support the idea of generative artists and theater makers in order to push forward into what this like next era of theater is going to be once everyone's more open than we are right now.
The pleasure of going last, a lot of what has been said is also true at New York Theater Workshop. Although I've just been sort of going through the most recent season coming up, and probably 60 to 70% of the projects that we end up producing are, the first conversation was with a director who brings a project to us. So although we also have, as Natasha was just saying, our charter or our mission from its founding was playwrights and directors. And at the time, to have directors have that kind of weight in the essence of a theater that was pioneering back in 1979. So to think of a director as a generative or an initiating artist was unusual at that time, unprecedented actually. So we have broadened on. So we also have a thing called a playwrights companies in residence, which is an acknowledgement that there are a lot of new pieces made, not by one person or a director and a playwright, but by a collective or a group of people. So we try to give space for that to be true as well. The thing I think that is to be said is it's very rare for us to hire a director to work on a play that we've already chosen. That's not it. It's not that it doesn't happen, but it's not the usual way. And so my thought always for directors starting out is to understand that you need to build relationships, because that's how things unfold. In my experience, I can't speak to anybody else, but in my experience, it was one relationship led to the next.
And Jim, with those relationships, are you specifically talking about with a playwright, or are there other relationships that you're talking about as well?
An actor, someone who becomes an artistic director, someone who becomes an associate artist, someone who becomes a designer, and there's any number of routes, but I can trace my entire life in the theater from relationship to relationship to relationship. It's rarely been, oh, I see an ad, they're hiring a director, so I apply, I send in a resume. That almost has never happened. And almost, as far as I know, within the workshop, almost never happens.
So there's clearly a trend here in everyone's answer, which is that most cases for all of your companies, the director comes from the playwright. Although in Jim's case, you said sometimes the director comes before the playwright.
Yeah.
So what advice might any of you have for directors who aren't currently attached to any plays that are in that pipeline of the off-Broadway theater? What can they do to either find those relationships, or if they know of a play that they like, how can they get that play in front of you?
I've been telling directors this, and just to clarify too, that playwrights are important, but the impetus to a project can come from many different areas. So that's the idea of this generative artists. Like, we asked a lighting designer to lead a play during the pandemic, so that was new for us. But I always tell directors, you got to hang out where the playwrights are. Get into the LARC, get into ND, get into all, and get to know the playwrights early. As they're coming out of school, that's, build those relationships, because it's not transactional. This relationship between the playwright and director, it can't be, because it will fail in the years that I've been doing this. If it is transactional, then it's not going to work. So that relationship has to be there. And our job, or at least my job, is to support the growth of that, the expansion of that organically. Because it follows with the designers, it follows with the actors, all of that. The whole company is built around relationships, as Jim said.
I would echo all of what's being said about building relationships and really trying to figure out where your tribe is. It's not everywhere. Different theaters have different vibes and energies, and finding the place that fits you and places that fit you. And, sometimes I think what's so complicated about our business and almost time wasting is the scattershot approach. I see it with playwrights all the time. They send their script to 20 off-Broadway theaters without really thinking about which theaters the play really fits for. So invest the time in the places that are making work that you respond to, that speak to you. Hang out, watch the work. I had an agent actually give me this advice a long time ago, which is come early, come to the dress rehearsal or the early previews, because that's when the makers are there. And that's when they don't know what they're doing yet. And they really want to have feedback from different people. And so come early and hang out, and at the same time, make your own work on your own terms, scrappy, whatever, but make it, have your ideas cooking so that it isn't, if anything that this pandemic has taught all of us, which is just like, it's so much is about your own agency to make shit happen in your own way, and that you can invent and find your pathways, and that, gatekeeping is really complicated. We're all gatekeepers for better or for worse, but we're not the only ones. And actually, everybody has the opportunity to be their own gatekeepers in particular ways. So I think about that a lot, about watching work, creating your own work, having ideas for work that you want to make, being curious and hungry to see stuff, and just not thinking that there's any one right or wrong way to work on something. And I particularly think that when you're starting out, you'll work on a mess of projects, and some will be your passion and some really won't. but it's all about building your body of work and figuring things out as you go.
I want to just jump in quickly here. I don't want to cut Natasha off if you were going to go in. I am going to respond strongly to being called a gatekeeper. It's not a word I prefer to describe myself. And if I feel in making a relationship with an emerging artist that that's the energy of like, okay, I've got to persuade this person to give me what I need, it's not going to work. What actually has to happen if you're an artist at the beginning of your career and you're trying to make your way, it is building a relationship with a potential collaborator. Because as Danielle said, none of us are necessarily the right collaborator. And what you are doing as a young maker is looking for the right person to fit your process. And there are a lot of options, and you want to find the right one. Like, I might be a shitty collaborator with certain people. And I can tell you that's true. I have lived that. And I think it's easy to surrender to saying that's the gatekeeper, quote unquote, with all of the power. And I'm just this little artist who has to figure out my way through that. That is so self-defeating. You have to empower yourself to understand I'm interviewing them. I'm bringing my gifts to them. And I want to make sure I have a partner that's worthy of my vision. I think that's a much healthier place to start into it. The other thing is, I think the most important thing is for someone like me to see your work. Because it's always fine to meet someone and say hello and have a nice meeting in the office, but it doesn't go anywhere. What goes somewhere is when I see somebody's work and I respond to it, and then we have a meeting and we click in some more substantive way, and then a journey begins. And then the door is open for you to say, you know what? I think about somebody like Sam Gold, who started with us way back when at the very beginning. And now we have a relationship where he'll come to me and he'll say, I have this idea about Othello, and I'd like to try to do it. And then it happens because I'm really interested, because Sam and I have really made a connection with giving Sam the opportunity to not just do new plays, but to do two on that kind of thing. That excites me, and I'm a better collaborator for him that way. So again, I'm just repeating here, but it is about building relationships, finding ways for us to see work that you do. Meeting people is fine, but it's not necessarily going to lead somewhere without this vision. I'll be quiet now. So.
That does open up a few more questions for me, but Natasha, before we go on to that, did you want to respond to the earlier conversation?
I feel like everyone said such great things. I really just want to echo all of that. Yes, to building relationships. I'm a big believer in thinking of theater as a landscape, and there's no one theater organization that can or should do everything. So we all have strengths and weaknesses, and I think that's a good thing. So I often, you know, tell folks who are trying to find their tribe, you know, go to the organizations, the theaters that are doing work that you're really compelled by. Pay attention to the, you know, personalities and aesthetics and visions of various organizations, and like let yourself get pulled into those directions that feel good to you. And then sort of identify the, you know, the sort of stepping stones, the web of people connecting you to that theater, or like a degree removed, and just like start conversations, you know, and you can start the conversation with something you saw there, just like talking about shows. I think we're all in this because we love doing that. So that is like the obvious thing in front of us that I think some folks forget about, because networking sounds so intimidating. But and I know I was really intimidated by that when I started, because I thought it meant that I had to talk about something that I didn't know already. But really what I needed to talk about was why I loved the theater I loved and what I wanted to do with it and what my place in it was to me. So start a conversation about a show you saw, what appealed to you about it, you know, find folks that share your taste and values and who you want to make theater with one day. And then ideally it's a fulfilling relationship, like Jim was talking about, that you then move forward organically. And then it sort of takes on a life of its own once you build a bit of a, of a world around you. Whenever folks ask me this question, I really think back to when I was without a tribe and thinking it was some magical component that was going to put me into the industry in like a special way. And then once I finally let go of that and just looked for people I was excited about and who I could talk to about theater, the rest of it started clicking a bit more, and I had resources and people to lean on, which you got to have in this world, in making theater in the city. It's just necessary.
So all of this, all that you just said, and even this discussion that came up a bit around the idea of gatekeeping, really touches on the general theme that I saw when I asked directors, when I told them about this panel and asked, what would you want to ask the leaders of these theaters? There was a general tone of feeling defeated and frustrated, like they're missing some key component that they don't understand for how to get work, and feeling a lack of empowerment, which Jim, you touched on, this feeling that there's gatekeepers that they don't have the keys to. So you've started talking a little bit, you've addressed those feelings a little bit by talking about building relationships. Natasha, you're talking about finding your tribe. And Daniela, you're saying hanging around the few theaters that are doing the work that you want to do. Are there any further thoughts in response to people's frustration of feeling sort of stuck at a self-producing level in their work as a director?
Well, this is connected to what you were asking, but I think a piece of what of a way forward. The great thing about I started as a director, and kind of once I got sucked into the trying to figure out how to keep a theater alive, that became my artistic project. It sort of became the play that I'm writing. I think it's important to understand that there is no set or prescribed path. It's not like if you're wanting to be a doctor, there's a very clear path. You go to undergrad, you go to medical school, you do a residency, you get certified, and then you're a doctor. There is nothing like that. It is, every path is unique. And that's the bad thing, and it's also the good thing. It's also the great thing. There's a lot of room for you to imagine yourself, imagine the way forward, and it's going to happen. One way or another, I think. I do think, that's enough.
I echo what Jim's saying on so many fronts, actually. And if you have the passion to make the work, you make the work. And you make it on your own terms. I mean, I just remember being in a TCG conference with Young Jean Lee, who was working for TCG at the time, who was making her own work. I mean, when I think about so many incredible artists, they began by making their work on their own terms. You know, Jim talks about Sam Gold, and I remember when he was directing his shows at Juilliard. You know, it's like you direct wherever you can get hired to direct, where people will pay you money, or when you're getting your friends together, but you have a super exciting idea that you want to pursue. And it feels like that stubbornness, that tenacity to keep going into the boxing ring, because you've got fight in you, and the fight is about, that's the essence of it. You know, I actually had a crazy conversation with a couple of artists that we're going to be working with, when I said, let's talk about what does success mean, you know, and they talked about all kinds of things and hopes and dreams for where the show would land. And then one of them asked me, well, what do you think? And I said, well, first off, I really want you all to make a production that you feel really proud of, you know, and it's so interesting how the two, as sometimes the business of making work it feels like it overshadows the art of making it so deeply. And I would just say, let your North Star be your passion for your making of the work. And if it is, and you are tenacious about your pursuit of making the projects that you need to make, they will find a way to have a life, and you and your tribe of colleagues are growing up together. You know, it's the most amazing thing to see Will Harper all over television these days, when I was like, I've done 500 readings with Will when he was 22 and I was 22 and no one knew each other, you know? So we all grow up together. And if you, I just think if you can follow the art and keep your heart happy, it will keep you in the run of this, the marathon of this for the long haul, that will keep you going.
Yeah. And I just want to also say, like, the frustration's real, you know, like it feels really rough for directors. It can be so chicken or the egg. And it just thinking about it drives me nuts. And I was never a director. That wasn't a role that I occupied, but it does like totally hurt. but I would echo again, like the great stuff people are saying here. I mean, really finding the opportunities and spaces where you can make in some sort of way, and keep building the relationships and the other side of things, and then have the two interact, right? Because there's a dynamic aspect to being in the theater community that I found, where things are constantly changing and I'm in different spaces. And then what's exciting is building bridges between spaces that didn't exist before, because you just created something or you connected people who didn't know each other before. And you just sort of create your pathway that way. Like Jim was saying, there's no path there. That was something that I struggled with. I was supposed to be a doctor. And that's as Jim was laying out, a very clear path, a difficult path, but a clear one. And then when I moved into theater, I was like, okay, what is my path? I'm going to be great at it. I need to know what it is. And then the big twist was, no, Natasha, just make what you want to make, do what you want to do. And you know, there may be a path, there may not be a path. You may create your own path, but it's also maybe not a path that can be replicated by someone else, because it's dictated by like experience and taste and like personal desire and where on the theater landscape a person wants to be. But there's something freeing about that. And that lets you investigate the questions that I think are at the heart of the pieces that we want to make, right? So I think it's using all of those things to be like, really thrilled that there is no path, so that we can find our own and find the one that will really support what the art is actually about, which I know can be really like a scary thing still. But I think finding, you know, any space where you can make something, it'll be a generative moment for you to push forward to the next step. You don't need to have the bird's eye view of all of it from the beginning.
All of that is true. I come from the school of I don't take no for an answer. And that's why we're still around. I just never waited for someone to solve my own problems. So that's what I think a director today is not about the craft. That's one little thread, I think, of what your career is. You have to be a marketing guru. You have to be a networking thing. You have to be able to do all of that, because you have to create your opportunities. You have to get it, because it's not going to be given to you. So we went around in the early part asking theaters to give us their dark nights so we could do readings. We did it in the basements of theaters. We did whatever it took to put it up. And eventually people paid attention. It didn't happen overnight. Very few directors are crowned, as you know. Most have to struggle through this, but you cannot wait for people to give you work.
Yeah, I would just add also that something that's very real that I think directors at the beginning of a life as an artist have to make some sense of. I really do believe it's, for the most part, there's being an artist and having those aspirations of creating your vision and sculpting that and that emerging in your own imagination. And then there's earning a living. And they are not the same thing. And I think that has to just be a starting point. Because I don't think merging them as, you know, expecting that by being the young director that you might be, that you're going to earn a living. I don't think that's going to materialize in the circumstances we're in now, which are, you know, terrible. I think if we were in a world where we had sustainable, reliable, substantive public support for arts organizations, it would be a whole different ballgame. But it really isn't. It's a capitalist society we live in, and it is very clear. Very clear. So I think, as harsh as it might sound, I think it's really essential to start your life understanding, I'm not going to earn a living at this. I will ultimately, but not now. I'm going to be an artist, and I'm going to figure out how I pay the bills. And then even within that artist section, there's so many different kinds of directing to do. There's so many different avenues and examples of how a directing maker has made a school of pieces that follow. So that's another part of that question. I'll stop.
I'll also quickly add a little little story. Daniela was actually was directing at a theater where I was assisting many years ago. There was an empty rehearsal room for like 3 hours every night that I knew about because I was the one figuring out all of those like very boring details that no one else wanted to figure out at the theater. And there was a young director, there was a young stage manager, there was a young writer, there were a couple actors around the theater organization. And so I basically put something together and we created something in that room. What it was didn't even matter as much as the fact that suddenly everyone at that theater, we got almost everyone that was part of this theater to come to this late night show to support us because we were the ones supporting them in all of their works. And then suddenly people would perceive the people in that room who were suddenly existing in a different way and having meetings with us about art versus about if they need a ride to the train station. So it's also being in these rooms and having that hunger for creating something with a different hat on that, especially in the beginning, I'm all for just like encouraging folks to find a way to find their own spaces to be in roles like that while not in a way that feels like it's not hurting you, right? There's a way that's really exploitative to do that sort of thing. But if you feel okay with doing a particular role that you're like, this is fine, it's not my dream, but I get to be in the room with a lot of great people and there might be a rehearsal room available for 3 hours every night, it ends up being really great. I didn't call myself a producer until after that summer. The artistic director of that theater was the one who offered me a role as a producer afterwards, and I was like, great, how do I produce? And she was like, you've kind of been doing it all summer. You're just keep going. So it's that sort of thing of finding your own opportunities, even if they seem small and not the dream yet. It's a lot of stepping stones to the dream. So find the stepping stones rather than like the last goal every single time.
And in that way, I think assisting can be really helpful too. People, you can definitely get too tired assisting and if you assist too much, but I think it can be an amazing learning opportunity and it's an amazing relationship building opportunity. And if you respect the theater, if you respect the director, or if somebody has an assistant, but you want to come and observe some rehearsals, whatever, any way that you can be in the room, that's a way to build a network that just keeps growing and things keep building from there. And so when we have an assistant director and then we have a reading that we're doing that actually is an orphan reading, it doesn't have a director, maybe that will be something that assistant director will do. Just things happen very organically. If you put yourself in the situations that Natasha's talking about, then you can find out, oh, the theater has an empty rehearsal time and you can take advantage of it. I'm also really actually amazed at how many people have meetings and actually have never seen anything at Rattlestick. Like they want a meeting for months and then they actually haven't seen anything. And that's interesting. I wouldn't really advise it. I also would say, like, if you invite somebody to come and see your work and they come, follow up. Like, actually, people took the time to see your work, and to assume that that person will come and share their whole feedback, they might not. So you taking the time to actually ask them what they thought, get their thoughts about that, continue the relationship somehow, as we've been talking about, so it isn't transactional, so that it is actually about building a relationship in a way. And that is why actually showing up to see the work is important that the theater is doing, so that you're investing the time and energy in caring about what they care about.
I will just echo being in the room. I think that's the key, being in the room. And I'm going to, Mike Liu, who's a playwright, not a director, very early on just offered to buy coffee for the company when we were rehearsing, and he would skateboard to Starbucks and come back. That's all he did. And then during breaks, he would say, oh, I'm a playwright. And it took maybe 4 years, but he was eventually produced. But it was seeing Mike not as a coffee person, but actually as an artist. And that tenor, that relationship changed. Like, oh, tell me about your plays. And then, and that's how that relationship builds. And it's the same thing with directors. Get yourself in the room. If you're a director, you must know somebody, volunteer to do something, but be there, because that's, I think that's the best way to start it off.
Ralph, how did that playwright change the way that you all saw him as being just an assistant coffee person to being a playwright that you might actually produce?
He started telling me about his plays. Said, I wrote this play and I'm going to do a reading of it. Will you show up? And I said, no. Then eventually it just went on and on and on. And I said, and I went and I said, oh, that's a really good play. And we produced it the next year. So that's how that thing starts. And now, you know, he's Michael Liu. And, but he put in that work. He knew that he needed to build those kinds of relationships.
So a couple things have come up that connect to questions that people had. One thing that a lot of people asked about was assistant directing, which you brought up, Daniela. Do you, at your companies, do you hire assistant directors? And if you do they usually come with the director? Or do you ever do that sort of matchmaking?
Again, for us, there's no one pathway. But generally, I would say... directors do not come with an assistant, and we do some matchmaking. Another thing that's pretty significant pathway at the workshop is our 2050 fellows, which are a 1-year fellowship, and it's half playwrights, half directors. And it is an engine for building relationships. And so if we are casting for an assistant, we generally start with our fellows or our immediate past fellows. So yeah, that's often it. Another part of this is because the essence of making theater is relationships. You can't make theater without having relationships. You can't sit in your room and write a book or paint a painting. You have to be in communion with other people. So a member of our Usual Suspects community might say to me, there's this young director you ought to get to know. And that is a huge step forward, is having a community member of some sort, not necessarily a Usual Suspect, but a community member say, this is an artist you should take note of, is also a really important thing. So if you do self-produce something and none of these four people get to see it, but someone that we know does see it and says to us, this is really worth seeing, that is a very important thing. It only makes sense in the theater that it's about relationships, because that is its essence.
Also, I mean, on assistant directors, I would agree with Jim. The directors often do not come with assistant directors. Sometimes directors are open. We do matchmaking. Sometimes people have directors. So it's very organic. So if folks are interested in assisting at Rattlestick, that's something we could talk about at some point. I also just want to give a shout out to some programs out there to support directors that have been really helpful. I personally was part of the Women's Project Lab. That was a really helpful program. The artist residency program at HERE was really helpful to develop projects directorially, but you come with a team, and that's definitely sort of a theater maker kind of program. Obviously, there's Drama League and Lincoln Center Directors Lab, and all of those programs I think can be really, really helpful. But Women's Project, just for me personally, was very, very helpful. I met a whole community. It ended up leading to me directing productions there and elsewhere, and it was very significant. So.
Thank you for sharing those.
Do you want to hear more about assistant directing? Because we have directing fellowships at Playwrights Horizons. I haven't had much engagement with them myself for the obvious reasons, but I can already see it's a really thoughtful process. And once someone's part of the Playwrights Horizons family, it's really a place where that relationship is pulled forward and grown and built on, rather than being a transactional sort of thing, a one-year, one-off kind of situation. And I know that because we've been talking about past fellows this whole year that I've been part of Playwrights Horizons, and they're like really core parts of our conversation. And I'll say I'm never one to think that assigning a person to a creative process makes sense. So yeah, I think it's about seeing how the energy is between, for example, a fellow and a director, and making sure it feels good to move forward as a directing assistant. But I'd always also say, you know, if you're interested in a particular theater or to assist a particular director, and you have a way to write someone there, it is, you know, writing a thoughtful, succinct email to just a couple people. This isn't the kind of thing that I think you do to a dozen places, really, but people you're really passionate about. And if you talk about the work you've seen and say something, again, like brief, but insightful and exciting and interesting, making it clear that you can be in conversation about the art itself, I think that, for me, at least personally, I'm always drawn to, at the very least, replying to that email and making some time to meet this person, which again, that's a foot in the door. That's like a way to get to know someone you don't yet know. But I do think it's about it not being a cold email, about it really feeling like it's a place that you'd be passionate about being at, or a person you'd be passionate to work for or work with. And then really just talking, like digging into the theater of it all, because I can't tell you how many people have like written me cold emails wanting to meet, and it's kind of hard to keep everyone straight. But the people who write something about some show I've worked on and say something that's really interesting about it and their experience with it, maybe the day that they saw it or something like that, I kind of can't help wanting to talk to them. So using those little tricks to get to know people and get to know new people that might feel inaccessible is just like a thing to keep in mind when you're really like drawn to a particular place or person.
Yeah, I think that's just another wonderful way of saying build an artistic relationship. You're starting an artistic collaboration. It's not a job seeking situation. It's the beginning and establishing of an artistic collaborative relationship.
And Ralph, do you use assistance at Mayi?
Yeah, we budget for it. But again, it has to be organic. So it can come from the director asking, I want an assistant director. In some cases, that assistant directing job will be slash dramaturg. So it's malleable, but we budget for it. And but again, it's not a hire. It's somebody that's has a relationship with a company that's going to be brought in because they're interested in the work, they're interested in the company, and they're interested in the people. But it's there. We will allow it, yeah.
So back to something we were talking about at the beginning, where everyone was saying that oftentimes a playwright will bring a director on And most of you said that you typically don't want to separate that partnership if it's already there. If a director is coming into a project and they have not directed at the off-Broadway level before, are there things that you're looking for, experiences that you're looking for them to have that tells you that they are ready for this? Are there instances where you've said to the playwright, we don't think this director has enough experience to work at this level?
No. Because that people start somewhere, right? And if we are going to be that, then we're going to be that. So what the assessment is, what does the director need to succeed, right? If it's his first time off Broadway, hallelujah. Well, but it's not a requirement. The requirement is to be a decent human being and be able to keep a company, sort of beating with one heart. That's the requirement. And then to realize the play, but it's not because they've never done it. We would never disqualify anyone like that.
I think for us, it really depends on the project. Because if it's a person we've never worked with that is relatively inexperienced, and you're talking about something on the scope of Hadestown, probably not. But if it's a more, proportionate, more of our, the scale that we understand, I think we are, if the playwright is affirmative and embracing, we would tend to trust it. We might staff around it in a more thoughtful way, to be supportive of a director who's at the beginning, but it would be okay.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. I think it's about scope of production. I'm not yet sure of what various components might be at Playwrights Horizons, for example, but I know that at other theaters I worked at, for example, if there was no experience with like a union crew, and I knew that the union, that the crew in this space, there are a lot of different quirks around it. On top of also working with, figuring out what tech is for you and like how to communicate with designers and actors and everyone at the same time. Like if it feels like it's an extra layer that's going to be overwhelming, I feel like we need to find a way to support that. And if we aren't able to do that, it feels like it's not really fair or respectful to the room to put someone in that space that's not going to be able to have all the tools to do their best work. So it's about weighing a lot of those different aspects, some of which are specific to a theater, but a lot of which I think are specific to a project and a production.
Yeah, and I would just add to that what Natasha just said. It's also maybe not the best thing for the director to be put into a situation where they're likely to fail or be in over their heads. So that has to be part of the consideration as well, is what's good for that person, for that artist, who theoretically we are trying to build a relationship with.
Yeah, I would echo what everyone else has said. And, it's not like we start production on a particular day and have never been in the room developing that project beforehand. So the reality is we're all hanging out for a while beforehand. And if it feels like there's a sense that this isn't cohesive in a way, we will make a shift if a shift needs to be made. But there's sort of plenty of time for directors at various experience levels to hang out with a particular project and grow it. And so by the time that we get to production, they're very experienced with whatever that project is.
Great. Well, there's so much more I can ask, but we're coming up at the end of our time together. So before we close, is there anything that I didn't ask that you haven't said that you're burning to tell these emerging up and coming directors as they're trying to make their way?
Keep going. I want to acknowledge what Natasha said, which is it is frustrating and it is hard. But we need you. We need you to make the work that you're passionate about making. And so keep going and don't stop. And that's my thought.
Yeah, we need curiosity and vision and experimentation. Like all those things are so key. So even though it can be hard, it is, yeah, I think all of us on this screen and a lot of other people really want to support that process, even knowing it can be difficult. So just know that you have people who are like rooting you on and trying to make resources align with that.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody. This has been a really awesome conversation, and I'm sure it will be very helpful to many of the people who are listening to it. So I will let everybody get on with their night. Thank you for being here, and I'm excited to see live productions at all of your theaters very soon. Good night, Thanks, everybody.
You have been listening to an episode of Up and Coming, an educational series presented as part of the 2021-2022 season of the Fresh Fruit Festival. For more information on this and all our other programs, please visit freshfruitfestival.com. The festival is a program of All Out Arts and is financed in part with public funds from the New York City Department of Cultural Affairs, the New York City Council, and by listeners like you. This is Louis Lopardi in New York City.